Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for keeping the faith with my show. Thank you for returning to the website, www.theunexplained.tv. Thank you for your emails. Every day I come home from work and there are more emails from different parts of the world, new listeners coming in all the time. Thank you so much for the response. Thank you for your donations. One man in particular, you know who you are, for your great help and support for my show. I plan to make contact with you very soon, but thank you for what you have done. Please keep those donations coming. They're vital to this work. If we want to expand this thing, we can do it together. But I need your support. I've had a few emails from people saying, why don't you do more shows and do them more regularly? Quite simply, it's because I have to go to work and I get up at 3:30 in the morning thereabouts, go to work early morning on the radio in London. And it's been pretty intense lately with the crisis in Japan. We've had a budget in the UK. And the crises in New Zealand, all the things that have been going on in this world in the year of 2011, and we're only 3 months into it now. By the time you hear this, it may be 4 months into it, but it has been quite, in many ways, a cathartic and traumatic year. And that is even before we start to talk about what is going on with Gaddafi in Libya and that whole Middle East and North African region. And by the time you hear this, that situation may have changed once more. We'll be monitoring that situation too. And I do recommend to you what Gerald Celente is writing about all of this. Gerald Celente at Trends Research, a regular guest on this show. Very, very interesting and very thought-provoking. Now, the guest this time round is a man that you suggested to me. I knew nothing about him. I'd heard nothing about him. And started to look into what he was saying and thought he was worth putting on here. So this is a bit of a walk on the wild side, a shot in the dark, putting on a guest that I don't know a lot about. But his theory is that the oceans and seas of this world are receding. You might have heard that before. It's not new. But his take on it, I think, is different. His name is Richard Guy. He's in the United States. So let's get on to him now by digital connection. Richard Guy, thank you for coming on.
I thank you very much, Howard, and it's also a great pleasure for me to be talking to you and to your listenership wherever they are across Europe. I don't know what your listenership is like, but that's certainly welcome the opportunity.
Hey, listen, Richard, I can tell you what my listenership is like. It is growing all the time, and you may not know this, but you will by the end of this. I've got a tremendous listener base in North America. I'm talking about North America, Canada, down into South America and around the world, and also here in the UK. So I have got thousands and thousands of listeners everywhere, and they'll all be hearing you. So, you know, no pressure.
Okay, that's great.
Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. First of all, whereabouts in the U.S. are you?
I am in the Bronx, New York, for the moment. I sometimes go to Canada for prolonged periods, and I do work up there. I work as a consulting engineer. I studied in London, by the way.
Okay, whereabouts in London?
Hammersmith School of Building.
I know it. Okay, that's in West London. Okay, so that's a top institution. You went to one of the best.
Thank you very much. It was good.
I detect from your accent there is a bit of what I think is Caribbean there.
Jamaican. I'm a Jamaican.
Okay, so you've been around the world then, my friend.
I have traveled a lot. And the beautiful thing about it, Howard, is that what I bring. I've written out 3 books. You might have seen them on my webpage. Did you have a chance to check it out?
I did briefly, yes.
Good. Well, those 3 books are observations I've made over 50 years of engineering fieldwork around the world, including Britain. I worked in Britain, and I worked in the Middle East. I worked in Jamaica. I worked in the Bahamas. I worked in the United States. I worked in Canada, currently working in Canada, too. And I've seen a lot of this phenomenon of receding seas everywhere I've worked.
All right. Well, let's wind it back then. Your whole theory is that the seas and the oceans around our planet, and I think I've heard this stuff before, but never quite in the way that you put it, are receding. They're pulling back. That's what you're saying, yeah?
Exactly. The recent earthquake in Japan, I've already written off to the earthquake people there to give me some information, because what's going to happen after the tsunami in Japan, the sea is going to settle down again as it has, but it will recede noticeably, perhaps 200-300 feet, sometimes more drastically than that, and it drops in level. It's all an offshoot and all by the earthquake action.
But isn't that just part of the stuff that we've been seeing? A lot of these TV commentators and so-called experts have been saying that what happens after a tsunami is that there is this enormous great hiatus event and the ocean surges forward across the land, as we saw, with terrible, devastating consequences. Then, of course, just like you were sloshing a bowl or your bath around, that water goes back. And eventually, it may not quite settle back to the same level where it was before. Isn't that just a natural phenomenon?
It's a natural phenomenon, but it's not noticed or it's not scientifically recognized. In other words, the recession of the sea is caused by the offshore rifting on the ocean floor. Now, the Japanese earthquake caused a 150-mile rift in the ocean floor. That's what draws the water from the shore in the first place, and that's what brings it back with such venom as a tsunami.
So what you're saying is that the ocean, the water, is slipping down this great big gulf, and that's what's causing these changes.
That's right. It sucks the water away from the shore, and it's this phenomenon I've been always aware of, and I've always looked for it wherever I've been. But it sucks the water away from the shore, and then it comes in with a vengeance. That's a tsunami.
Okay, so there's no difference between what you're saying is there and what all the scientists who've been on CNN and RT and all the other sources have been saying about the terrible situation in Japan. There's no difference between you, is there?
No, none whatsoever. Except that I take it one step further and I pay attention to the recession afterwards, in the aftermath. I pay attention to that. After the Boxing Day tsunami, 2004, I think, the sea has not settled down again on the former shoreline. It's retreated 120 feet and dropped something like 600 millimeters. Nobody has noticed that, but I heard it and I recorded.
You say nobody's noticed it, but you've got the information. You found it out, so somebody must have recorded it.
Yeah, well, it was mentioned, but not in a scientific context. It's just mentioned, well, perhaps an observer that lives there says, well, the sea has gone out 200 feet, but that's all. It's not recorded with any significance. I place a significance in it.
What is the significance then?
The same thing. Off the coast of Sumatra, a major rift opened up. The sea withdrew, and it came back in with a vengeance. That is the problem. It's the earthquake action on the seafloor that causes these tsunamis.
All right. So and I'm not an engineer, I'm not a scientist, and I am by no means an expert. If there is this enormous great event, as indeed there has been, on the ocean floor, and the ocean floor is shaped differently than just, say, you put a ridge in your bath at home, then the distribution of water, which side it slops to, is going to change as well. Isn't this all we're talking about?
Well, let's put it this way. That analogy, I'm not quite sure exactly what you're conveying, but all I'm saying is there's a rift, a sudden rift. The geological people say it's an uplift. I say the opposite. It's a slump. And that slump naturally draws water away from the coast and it surges back. So that's what I'm saying, Howard, in so many words, okay?
All right, I think I understand that. So whereas what we're normally told about tsunamis is that there is an upsurge, and certainly that's what those diagrams seem to be showing us, that the tectonic plates move together, the land shoves itself upwards. You're saying that actually what's happening is it's going down. If that's the case, how come nobody's noticed that?
No, that's that's a very good question. The thing about it is, nobody notices anything because we can't see it. It's underwater. Okay? No. And a lot of people cannot understand that there is so much tectonic action, submarine tectonic action. Nobody sees it. We are aware of it. It registers on Richter scales around the world, but nobody knows what it does. So we're talking about the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. We're talking about the Ring of Fire. We're talking about a global circle of heat. underneath. That's our Earth is literally expanding. I hate to bring that up in this discussion because that's another side of things. But the heat internal of the Earth is causing an expansion process. My theory, Howard, is that earthquakes are a manifestation of the expansion process. And when it expands, it does not uplift, it slumps. Every river valley around the world is a major slump. And remember this, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is also expanding at the rate of about 6 feet every 60 years. And nobody notices it because it's out of sight, it's out of mind, it's submarine.
But doesn't that mean then the continents are moving further apart?
Exactly, Howard. That's exactly it. North America is being pushed away from Europe by about 6 feet every 60 years. And nobody notices it because it's all a submarine. It's called seafloor spreading. The Earth is oozing lava continuously at the Mid-Atlantic and pushing the continents apart. Nobody, of course, I know about it. No, but nobody pays any attention to it. Because it's submarine, it's not seen. 75% of the tectonic action around the world is submarine. Hence, out of sight, out of mind. But that's what's causing everything, meaning the subfloor, the subsidence, and the what I call a slump.
Richard, I'm just going to stop you for half a second. I can hear a sort of trembling or rocking noise. I hope it's not to do with the Earth's tectonic plates or anything there in New York City. What's going on? What's that noise?
The noise is the heavy machinery. We are sitting on solid Precambrian rock here in the Bronx. And that machine is a powerful, it's a huge hydraulic thing drilling the rock.
Hey, so you've got New York-style roadworks outside.
Yes, exactly. Remember I said to you they're tearing up the road up front, and that's why you hear boom, 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 boom.
Gee whiz, I didn't think we'd be able to share in the experience, but we are. Okay.
Oh, yes, it's massive. I wish I could show it to you. Well, I'd have to move this damn thing outside. But the main thing is this, that the roads are being torn up and the rock is hard. So now, there's a transmission of vibration from the street to the houses. Half of the houses, the plaster is falling off because of this dum, 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 dum. It's tectonic. It's creating a tectonic thing on the road here. It's a very interesting thing. Nobody notices it, but I do.
Okay, and you're telling us that as an engineer, nobody notices the fact that the continents are slipping apart and bits of the ocean floor are sinking and not being forced up into mountains like we thought they were. That's what you're saying to us, but what does it mean? What difference does it make to anything?
Okay, Howard, no, that's another $100 million question you've just asked.
I'm full of them.
The point is... No, that's good. I love your show, by the way. You ask very pertinent questions.
Thank you. Now,
the thing is that as the Earth expands, and I'm going to be very bold about this, because the Earth expands, we have this seafloor slumping, we have the seas receding constantly. So when I first came up on this theory about 30, 40 years ago, I said, my God, I worked it out mathematically, and I said, the Earth must be expanding. And I said, I wonder who around the world shares this. I said, am I the only one in the world that thinks the Earth is expanding? I've subsequently found out that a lot more people are thinking on that vein. However, what happens is this, that I said, well, if the Earth is expanding, what manifestations must I look for in my research to prove that the Earth is expanding? And it came to me, I said, well, if the Earth expands, the seas must recede. It's a fact. It must recede because if the Earth is expanding, call it growing. If the Earth is growing, the water quantum has not changed on Earth. It's an enclosed ecosystem. The same water we started out way back in history is the same water we have today. So nothing changes. People say to me, Richard, where is the water going if it's receding? I said, it's not going anywhere. But it has greater implications. I heard that earthquake, Howard. it has greater implications. As the sea recedes, I said, well, Let me, in order for me to prove this, let me go back into history. So I started delving way back into Roman history and into various history of Mesopotamia, history of the Mesopotamia is the cradle of civilization. So I started there. I did a lot of research, and fortunately, I was working in the Middle East, and I did some more research there, and I found out that Baghdad, which is 350 miles from the sea today, once had a harbor. And if you read Sinbad the Sailor, you remember this, that he started on his 8 journeys from Baghdad Harbor. Now, that's interesting. 350 miles. Then I subsequently learned that Nineveh is the capital of the Assyrian nation. And Nineveh is 700 miles from the sea today. But if you remember the Bible story of Jonah running away from Nineveh, he ran away to sea. He took a boat and tried to escape God's dictum. The fact is, Nineveh is 700 miles from the sea. Now, in those days, with the lack of mobility and walking on foot, Jonah certainly did not run 700 miles to find a ship to get away. So the point I'm making is historians say this, that Nineveh is the oldest city in Mesopotamia. But what they have overlooked, and here again, nobody has come up with this except Richard Guy. What they have overlooked is this. Nineveh is not only the oldest city in Mesopotamia, it is the first city in Mesopotamia, because every other city coming down the Tigris and Euphrates valleys were built downward in descending order from Nineveh as the sea receded. Now we go to Asher, which is below, then we go to Babylon. Babylon has a history of alien infiltration, and these aliens lived in the sea at Babylon.
Hey, now you're getting into something completely different. Alien infiltration. Are you talking about extraterrestrial infiltration?
Extraterrestrial. And it's features in Babylon's history. They taught them all the various advances in science and geometry and mathematics they knew. And they reverted to the sea every single night and came out next day to continue the teaching. And the point is this, today, Babylon is 400 miles from the sea. Then we go further down to Ur of the Chaldees. Ur of the Chaldees is where Abraham was born. Abraham is the head of the Jewish nation or Jewish people. Now, Abraham, when he lived in Ur, it was a teeming, busy seaport on the Persian Gulf. It is now 200 miles away from the Persian Gulf. And, of course, Iridai is now some miles away from, but that is below Ur. So now here we have Baghdad, 350 miles, Ur, 400 miles, and Babylon, 400 miles, and they all had sea, Ur, Babylon, Asher, and up to Nineveh, 700 miles. So every city was established after Nineveh, downwards, towards the Persian Gulf.
And you say this is evidence that way, way back, that far back, the oceans and the seas were receding, and it's a process that you're telling me now, I think, that continues to this very day, because we're seeing evidence of it now.
Exactly. Now, if you read I read the New York Times, the article is published on the 26th of September, 2007, and it was first published on the 5th of June, 1981, telling of the recession of the seas in New Jersey. New Jersey has noticed it. Now, another thing, Howard, is why we don't notice this is because there is no, I call it generation continuity. You come, it's just like Britain. You see your sea today, and tomorrow you see it, and your son comes along and sees it, and your grandson comes along and sees it, and they all assume it's the same sea, the same level through all these generations, but it is not so. As I said to you in my email, the town of Sandwich on the south coast of Britain was once had the largest harbor in Britain. It could accommodate, they boasted, all the ships in the British Empire. Today, Sandwich is 3 miles inland and away from the sea. The same with Richborough. Richborough used to be a Roman naval port in Roman times in Britain. Today, it is also 3 kilometres inland.
Now, I always thought that some of these phenomena in the UK, certainly, and I guess it goes for other parts of the world, are down to the fact that our coastlines are forever changing. Certain parts, I know because I come from one of them, in the northwest of England near Liverpool, certain parts of our coastline are being built out by phenomena such as longshore drift, I think they call it, where bits of material are washed from one place and deposited on a beach further up the coast, and other places are being washed away. And I always thought places like you were talking about there here in the UK simply arose because of that phenomenon. You're telling me it's not entirely that simple.
It's not entirely that simple. No, it's definitely, it's a dictate of history. Receding seas is dictated through historical movements constantly. In Wales, I have contributors who read my books around the world, from Singapore right around to Wales. I have a very good contributor in Wales. And if he's listening, I certainly hope so. Hi, Leon. How are you doing? Leon Powell.
Okay. I'm sure he is listening. And if he isn't, we'll make sure he does. All right. Yeah. So you say this is the phenomenon. It's a phenomenon that generation to generation, because of the way things work in our world, gets missed. That's okay. I'll accept that. But what does it mean? What difference does it make to the lives that we lead? Does it mean there's some great impending disaster coming down the track? I don't quite compute that part of it.
No. The thing is this, that it's the Earth is expanding. The universe is expanding. All the planets we have found, the sun is expanding. And eventually the Earth is going to get so hot that we will have to find alternative living space in the cosmos. But the beautiful thing is, when I give my talks, everybody says, well, when is this going to happen? I says, don't rush home and get the kids out of school.
In other words, not in your lifetime and not in my lifetime.
No, 4,000 million years, the sun is going to be so huge, it will incinerate the Earth. But by which time, we won't be here.
But that isn't new either, is it? Scientists say that eventually the universe that we have will die because the sun will explode, and that means the end of us unless we find ourselves another home somewhere else. And that's what Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, was talking to me about a couple of shows ago. So that's
exactly
not new. But you're saying that this ball that we live on, because it's full of all this molten rock and gas in the middle, is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. These sea level changes and ocean level changes are part of that phenomenon. But at the end of it all, we'll expand to the point where we destroy ourselves.
Of course. Well, not we. The Earth will just destroy us all. The Earth will eventually have the last laugh on all of us. No matter what we do to it, it will undo everything we have done. Okay. But I was making a point about New Jersey and the generation observational gap, as I call it.
Okay, go ahead.
New Jersey started using aerial photography in 1922. And over the years, they have seen the growth of the land outward. With the results, 40 years ago, I walked on a boardwalk at Atlantic City. It's no longer there because it has built up by hotels moving further towards the sea. The boardwalk is gone. So New Jersey has been selling off these lands. Donald Trump built his Taj Mahal on land like that was left by the sea. Playboy and a lot of other hotels have built because the land is prime real estate left behind by the receding seas. Now then, New Jersey, the state, said, wow, if this has been happening since 1922, what the hell has been happening since 1776 when we gained our independence from Britain? So they have been looking back through old surveys and old maps, trying to get back taxes for the lands that have been resolved, the lands that have been, it's true.
That's extraordinary.
Okay. It's extraordinary. But you can read it in the New York Times, and that will tell you exactly how it's panning out because they're having a hell of a fight. But the only thing is this, because these lands have been just materialized since 1922, they have put caveats on all these lands so that any development taking place, you have to pay the piper before you are allowed to develop because the state must get its little pound of flesh. And that's what the article is about. So if you want me to just reiterate those, one is the 27th, of September 2007, New York Times, and the other one was on the 5th of June 1981, and the title of it is "The Jersey Rights to Shore Prove Costly to Casinos," because Donald Trump had to pay about $1.5 million to get permission to build before they lifted the caveat. So what I'm saying is, and by the way, these funds in New Jersey are being used towards the school funding. They're selling off the foreshore lands to fund the school program. So it can be read. You can read articles like this.
Okay, let's just park that point there then, Richard, because, you know, I was taught geology at school and much of it I've probably forgotten. But they always used to say to us, some parts of the country, UK, are building out. The land is expanding. It's moving outwards because material is being dumped there. And other parts, as I said, are being eroded away because the currents are so fierce that stuff is being swept away from there and it's being taken away and deposited in other places. And that doesn't seem to include any theory that the level of the ocean, the sea, is going down.
Yes, okay. That point is well made. The sea's recession, first of all, this all started... You have heard of isostatic rebound. You have heard of post-glacial rebound. That's geology. You learned that in school.
Is that where the glaciers are sinking? The land is going down, and then as the glaciers melt on the land rises. Is that so?
Exactly. Now, Lyell, Darwin was a disciple of Lyell. Lyell was a geologist. Now, Darwin was not a geologist. He was a naturalist. But Lyell influenced Darwin. So when Darwin went around the South American continent and went through the Pacific in his boat, the Beagle, he saw, in other words, being influenced by Lyell, he saw what he termed raised beaches. In other words, all the beaches he saw were raised above the sea level. So he concluded that the land was rising from the sea, because we always assume sea level to be a constant. Sea level has not changed through all history, from the time of Columbus, from the time of the Vikings, it has not changed. That's our mental take on the sea. The sea level never changes. That is the big fiction in our thinking. And that is what... Now, when Darwin made this observation, raised beaches, he said the sea, the land is rising from the sea. The sea is untouchable. It's etched in stone. The level never changes. Agassiz came along, the Swiss glaciologist came along later, and says the reason for this rise, based on Darwin's misinterpretation, is that the glaciers have melted and the burden has been lifted from the land, so the land is now rebounding. Therein lies the rub. The land is rebounding, so it's lifting from the sea. Do you see the subtle difference there, Howard?
I do. I've even seen whole documentaries on the BBC over here in the UK that tell me that is the phenomenon. And it is a phenomenon, isn't it? That because the weight of glacial material is not on, for example, the likes of the south of England, isn't Britain supposed to be skewing? Part of it is going up and part of it is supposed to be going down, simply because part of it hasn't got the weight of a glacier on top of it anymore.
Yes. Well, that's general accepted theory. But just like I have my theory, Darwin had, Lyell had, and Agassiz has his theory. So the point is this, that over the years, historically, why has sea level dropped from the top of Mount Ararat to sea level today? It's 19,000 feet. That says something, doesn't it? You see my point?
I do see your point. And if we follow your theory, a couple of things come from that. And the first one is to ask you the question, what will be within our lifetime, or perhaps a few generations, what will be the consequence of this, do you think?
Oh, it's nothing detrimental to anybody, but it's just that the acceptance, I would like to be able to say that before I die, people say to me, Richard, you know, you weren't talking a lot of rot. The fact is, historically, now another thing is this, Howard, that has a burden of proof on it, that all ancient civilizations evolved, first of all, on the tops of high mountains. Did you ever consider that? No, this is something that should interest your listenership. Why did the Egyptian civilization start high? Why did Mesopotamia start up in the Atlas Mountains when, by the way, Noah is a patriarch of the Assyrian nations, and Noah came from that neck of the woods up in Nineveh. Okay? Remember, Noah was supposed to be the only man on earth with his family after the flood. And the flood touched down on the top of Mount Ararat. Mount Ararat is 19,000 feet above sea level today. But the Chinese civilization started on the Yellow River Plains plateau. The Egyptians started up in the Sudanese highlands. The Tibetans are still living at 18,000 feet. The Incas were living at 15,000 feet. The Indo civilizations, when they discovered Mohenjo-Daro, they said, wow, what is such a beautiful civilization doing so high up in the Indus Valley? Subsequent to that, they discovered Harappa. And Harappa predated Mohenjo-Daro by about 3,000 years. And subsequent to that, they have discovered other settlements and communities higher up that predate Harappa by 1,000 years.
So what you're saying is that the reasons we may have given, or the reasons we might have assumed for why that happened, are not the reasons we thought they were, and they were to do with sea level at the time. And the sea level was higher because the sea level over time has been going down and down and down.
Exactly. And that's a summation of my theory. The earth expands, the seas recede, and it gives us the catalyst for the development of civilizations downward and the expansion of their territorial expansion. So that's simply the trilogy of my books deals with that. Earth expansion, the receding seas, and the last book I wrote is The Ascent of Man Downhill All the Way.
Good title. I like it. But in practical terms, I'm just wondering what it means. I mean, it obviously changes our appreciation of science. I'm just wondering whether it might have some practical benefits down the track, perhaps to allow us to better predict, for example, tsunamis.
Okay, now that's another million-dollar question. The thing is this, earthquakes are unpredictable, so they are almost impossible to predict. Now, I've seen a lot of documentaries, and just for example, all the rivers, the Colorado River has dams on it. It has the Boulder Dam. It has Grand Coulee. It has the Glen Canyon Dam. And I saw a very interesting documentary. They're all leaking. Where do they leak? Around the abutments, because there's movement. The ravines extend. Oh, by the way, I did a lot of research on this years ago in Arizona, running around, looking on the bridges to see them falling off their trestles. And this is where I found a couple, and I had to notify the highway department to rectify the situation because they're about to fall. The canyons expand very silently. I call it seismic creep. And they will drop a bridge. And a lot of bridges, about 100 bridges, fail every year mysteriously in the United States because nobody, it's not engineering problems. It's not an engineering fault. They just fail. I drove over a bridge on the Mississippi many years ago. And a few months later, it just fell into the Mississippi. And there was recently another big bridge failure on the W-35 across the Mississippi. It just drops the bridges because the Mississippi is a major earthquake fault of course, so is the Colorado. So
and you're saying that as far as you know, those failures that happen are unexplained, and you're also saying, I think, that you've got the answer to this, that if everything is expanding and the seas are moving back and the land is moving outwards, of course things are going to structurally fail like this.
Exactly. But engineers don't pay any attention to it. And I've been talking my head off for years. You have to factor in expansion because we design a bridge for a finite span. This bridge is to span 50 feet. Great. But what about the expansion that creeps up in the night on us? I call it an insidious expansion that drops the bridge after it's expanded 6 feet. It drops off the abutment. So this is why I say engineers, oh, by the way, the major cities in the United States are now retrofitting the bridges for earthquake. Now, the very fact that the bridges are being retrofitted meant that they were not conceived in the first design era. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do.
So now, on the major San Francisco bridge, all the major bridges in New York had a big refitting program some years ago, and it's still going on. The bridges are being refitted for earthquake capability.
Now, Richard, we don't want to scare people, obviously, here. But from what you've just said, that's got massive consequences. That could mean that, especially in poorer countries where they perhaps don't have the money to invest in monitoring and engineering skills to the same degree, but there could be buildings, bridges all over the planet that may be about to fail at some point because of something that we have not factored into their design.
Exactly. No. If anything derives or comes out of this program, that's something. It's for engineers to pay attention to this factor of seismic creep. It's a very insidious factor, and it works against engineering. We design, as I said, for finite spans. But what about the capability of the Earth to define everything in its own terms and expand, as I said, infinitesimally?
So, a couple of things here. Your work seems to say two things to us. Number one, you believe that our understanding of ancient civilizations and why they are what they are and where they are is wrong. And number two, in the present day, we've got a great big engineering problem because we haven't factored in what potentially, I think, is the most important part of your work, that the Earth is expanding and it's going to bring bridges and buildings down if we're not very, very careful. And we need to rethink the way that we design things and the factors that we build into those designs. Otherwise, in some parts of the world, especially where perhaps the ground underneath you is expanding faster, I don't know if that happens, it's going to be a huge problem. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. You're perfectly right. And the thing is this, have you ever noticed on the highways, whenever there's a major earthquake, say in San Francisco, like last time, the Bay Bridge, one whole span of the Bay Bridge just dropped straight. San Francisco is on so many faults. It's just, well, the Golden Gate Bridge is across a fault line. That's been retrofitted. But the other day, a whole span of the Bay Bridge, I forget where, it just dropped. And as you see the earthquakes in California, all the highways are destroyed. They just fall and drop. On my videos, by the way, I have a lot of videos out. My son makes them. It's called The Mysterious Receding Seas. And in those videos, there are footage and footage of earthquake phenomena, earthquakes occurring, tearing up roads, tearing up bridges, and the Mississippi is my favorite fault line because everybody overlooks the Mississippi. The New Madrid earthquake was on the Mississippi, and everybody looks all around and does not know that the Mississippi is one of the most seismic fault lines in the United States, second only to the Grand Canyon and the Colorado River.
So we sit back and we watch coverage of what happened in Japan and what happened somewhere else on the Ring of Fire around New Zealand in Christchurch. Those terrible events, very, very recent and very, very shocking for all of us. But there is another slow phenomenon that, even if we think we're in a safe zone like the United Kingdom, actually could affect all of us.
Exactly. Now, I don't want to scare you in the UK, but remember this, that Britain has about 3-4 earthquakes per year, and they all occur in the middle of the British and the English Channel. Because remember this, Britain was once co-joined to Europe. and it has been splitting away since, for about, I think, Churchill says in his book, 24,000 years. It's split, well, perhaps a little greater than that. But Britain used to be joined to Europe. And it's splitting away and still splitting. And the splitting factor is in the middle of the English Channel. And do you know what runs under the English Channel?
Apart from cables, no.
The channel.
Right, okay. Now that is an interesting factor because, you know, I've used that channel tunnel so many times and it is a real engineering feat. And they always say it is built to withstand all natural pressures. It's built to keep the English Channel above it out and it's designed to cope with the flexing of the planet.
Well, I certainly hope so, because everybody says to me, I was there some years ago in Britain and I almost drove, I was in Dover and I almost drove. I said, no, I'm not going. I almost ended up in France. I said, I'm not going through that channel. But of course, this is not to scare people. But as an engineer, I'm quite aware that it's built across an earthquake fault line, the middle of the English Channel. That's all I have to say. I don't want people running scared of the tunnel and the revenue being lost because of what I say. But the point is this, it's a fact of life. England is separating from Europe. Still is.
Come on, Richard. Are you honestly telling me that the very clever people who designed that channel tunnel didn't take into account every reasonable factor?
I am not saying that, Howard. I dare not say that because I have no information to the contrary. And by the way, what's interesting, years ago when I visited Deal, there was a friend there, a friend in Jamaica says to me, when you go to Deal, visit my friend. He's a surveyor on the channel. And when I went to his place, we had tea the afternoon, my wife and I and him, and he had a little thing on the, he put it up on a plaque on the wall. It's a little metal disc. Sorry, it's a little metal. Anyway, it was the final measurement to bring France and Britain together under the tunnel. And he put it on a plaque on his wall. I said, boy, would I love to have that. He says, no, it's for my grandchild.
Well, that's a real collector's item. Okay, now, your work is fascinating. And in some ways, I guess you're a lone voice. Maybe so. But, you know, you're able to get your work out there. You've written books and you're going on this show here today. And I'm sure you'll be speaking in other places and you do public talks and all the rest of it. But to do the real research is going to take resources, technically and perhaps intellectually, university resources that you simply cannot call on, I guess, at the moment at your home in the Bronx. So what is going to happen to this work of yours? Where's it going to go?
Well, as I said previously, I would hate to die and not get this out there. Now, I'm a member of the, I used to be a member of the Institute of Structural Engineers in London. Some years ago, I wrote to them a very long article telling about all this. And they said to me, it is not really in the mode of structural engineering. So they did not accept it.
Is that their rather nice and British way of saying you're talking rubbish?
Exactly. Do you understand? And right now, a lot of people out there will be saying, you're talking rubbish, but check the facts out. I've been talking and I've been writing and talking on this subject for 30 years, and not one soul has come up to me and says, you're chatting a lot of rot. Because not even the scientists who have the opportunity to say, Richard, you're chatting bilge. Nobody has come to and said that to me because they can't disprove it.
I love that word you used, bilge. Now, listen, we're going to have to leave it there. We'll come back to it. I think then what you want to do, and it's not for me to say what you want to do with your life, but it sounds to me what you are doing with your life is you're posing these questions and you want somebody somewhere to pick up this work and take it further.
Take it further before I kick the bucket. Because
well, I was far too polite to say, how old are you now? Go on, tell me.
I'll be 79 this year, July.
Okay, well, you've got years of productive life left in you. Years.
Well, I certainly hope so. But really, as an engineer, by the way, could you put my webpage out there?
I'll do better than that. Go on, you tell me what it is.
It's www.widemargin2000.com.
Okay. That's www.widemargin2000.com.
.com. Yes, I would appreciate if you put it out there so that people can answer and read my books. And as I said, nobody refutes me, and I have a free reign of. I give a lot of lectures on this, by the way, Howard. And I mentioned to you that the Inuit people, the Eskimos, mm-hmm. are being told by their consultants that the seas are rising, but their ancestors have known for years that the sea in the Hudson Bay is getting shallower and the seas are receding. So that's just one little area of the world that's having this. So, you said that you wanted to cut off at this point, at this juncture?
Well, our time is limited and I think we can explore this in the future. I just want to ask you this before we go, before we have to leave this. You are, I won't say you're a lone voice, but you are a voice... trying to get this message out in the midst of a lot of other noise out there. And it sounds to me like it's been 30 years worth of work. Do you think it's been 30 years well spent?
I think so. If I can get one thing across to engineers before I die, that we have to interpret and factor in expansion and insidious inspection. In other words, the bridge that failed across the Mississippi in Minneapolis, in Indianapolis, it has many spans approaching the river. The only span that failed was the one that spans the river. Does that tell you anything?
Good place to leave it, Richard Guy. Thank you very much. And I hope they complete those roadworks outside your home in the Bronx. I hope they do it sometime.
Well, all right, fine. If you want, I'll notify you when it's completed so we won't hear any more noise on the next interview.
It sounds to me like they need a good engineer.
No, they have good guys. I poke my nose in there and see the trenches. They're doing good jobs out there.
Oh, well, I'm very pleased to hear it. Well, you take care, and thank you very much for speaking with us. And your website is www.widemargin2000.com.
Thanks very much, Howard, for having me on your show. I love your show, and I'll be listening in for future. And let me know when this is being broadcast so I can also listen into it.
I will, Richard Guy. Please take care and go well. Thank you very much.
And same to you. And thank you very much. And bye-bye, listeners. Bye-bye.
What a character. Okay, now I know you're going to have views about that. His name is Richard Guy. He's in the Bronx in the United States. He's got people digging up the roads outside where he lives. But he's got quite an amazing theory, hasn't he, that everything that we live in and sit on could be affected by. Isn't that worth listening to? What do you think about that? Thank you very much for your donations and your support for this show. Please keep the emails coming. We're at www.theunexplained.tv. Adam Cornwell, a creative hotspot, is our webmaster. Martin made the theme tune. You made the show by listening to it. Please stay here for more fascinating stuff from this show, which is called The Unexplained. My name is Howard Hughes, and take care.